Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. I'd like to remind the participants that their lines have been placed on a listen-only mode until today's question-and-answer session. At that time, if you do have questions, that is star followed by one on your touch-tone phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If anyone has objections, please disconnect at this time. I'll be turning the call over now to your first speaker for today, Mr. Tom Skinner. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Kelly, and thank you all for joining us today for this update on the public health response to the first Ebola case diagnosed in the United States in Texas. With us today is the director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, Dr. Tom Frieden. Also with us is the commissioner of the Texas Department of State Health Services, Dr. David Lakey. And also joining us with us is Clay Lewis Jenkins, Judge, Dallas County, Texas. We're going to allow them to provide some brief remarks, and then we'll get to your questions. Dr. Frieden.
Okay, good afternoon, everyone, and sorry for the slight delay in starting. This is the first of what we anticipate will be daily telebriefs on the Ebola situation, jointly conducted between ourselves at CDC and the folks on the ground in Texas. As you know, within just a couple of hours of the first case being confirmed in our lab and the Austin lab in Texas, we held a public briefing. And our approach is always to provide all of the information that's available as soon as we can make it available. We know that there are a lot of questions that people wish they had answers to, and we may not have those answers yet. What we can do is tell you what we know and what we're doing to find out more about the things that we're all interested in. Before I start, I want to give you the bottom line. The bottom line here is that we remain confident that we can contain any spread of Ebola within the United States. There could be additional cases who were already exposed. If that occurs, systems are in place so that they will not further spread Ebola. But doing so requires meticulous and rigorous work, and that's the work that's underway now. One of the questions that's been raised is whether the individual who's in hospital now was screened when he left Liberia. We were able to locate the specific screening information from that individual. That individual had their temperature taken. It was taken by an individual who was trained by the CDC. It was taken with a thermometer that is approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration for measuring temperatures of patients in hospital and elsewhere, and his temperature was 37.3, i.e., 97.3 Fahrenheit. He didn't have a fever when he was sick, and all of our subsequent interviews confirm that he began having symptoms 4 or 5 days after he arrived in this country on the 24th of September, Wednesday. Now, we know that spread of Ebola is possible through physical contact with patients or body fluids, and therefore the current intensive effort is to identify anyone who may have had contact and who therefore would require monitoring for 21 days after that contact. At this point, the teams on the ground, which involves CDC, local and state public health experts, are assessing about 100 people to determine whether or not they have had contact. At this point, since beginning yesterday morning, we have interviewed most of those people, but far from all, and we have identified a handful of individuals who may have had exposure and who therefore will be monitored. That includes individuals from the household, and we're looking carefully at healthcare settings as well. We don't have specific numbers at this time as to the number of people who we believe may have truly had contact with the patient. When we do have those numbers, we will update them. We will provide them. They may change slightly from day to day as we learn more about what people have done and what the exposures actually were. But our approach really is to cast a wide net, to reach out to as many people as there are who may have had contact, so that we could identify all of those who might well have actually had contact. Our approach is kind of a concentric circle approach. First, those who are in the most immediate vicinity who may well have had contact with the individual or their body fluids, and then those who are less likely to, and we assess each individual specifically for what their exposure might have been. I will also say that questions about the status of the patient need to be referred to the hospital. We understand that the individual remains in serious condition as of now. I do want to make one last point before turning it over first to Dr. Lakey and then to Judge Jenkins, and this is the real importance of cooperation in this, and the way to maximize cooperation is to make sure that we're getting services to those individuals or communities or countries which are experiencing Ebola. In public health, we have a lot of experience dealing with outbreak situations. And the more we're able to surge services and support to individuals, families, communities, and countries, the quicker we can not only contain the outbreak there, but reduce the risk to others. Dr. Lakey?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. This is David Lakey, the Commissioner of Health for the state of Texas. We've had a very busy last 24, 48 hours here in the state of Texas. I'm sitting in the EOC with my colleague, Judge Jenkins. We have formalized the incident command structure to make sure we're managing this meticulously and making sure issues are fully addressed. I think our messages are very similar to the messages that you just laid out. Our work today is to identify individuals that may have come in contact with Ebola, with the individual. Work is going on in the community and also in the hospital, working in conjunction with the Center for Disease Control to make sure individuals are identified. Also, work is taking place that any individual that is identified has the monitoring in place in order to ensure that if they do become febrile, that is identified early. And I'd like to say, at the same time, the care of the individual that has been identified as being infected. I had the opportunity of walking through the facility myself yesterday and testify that they are doing a very, very good job in being meticulous in infection control. Making sure folks shower in, shower out before they leave that area. The whole unit is dedicated to the care of this individual, and very dedicated healthcare workers caring compassionately for this individual. Again, our thoughts are with the family and the patient as we continue to ensure safety and ensure that no additional Texans will be exposed to Ebola. With that, that's the end of my comments. Thank you, Dr. Frieden.
Judge Jenkins, please.
Certainly. Just by way of background for the people on the call, the Dallas County Judge is the county executive who is elected countywide and is the highest elected officer in county government in Texas, and is the person who is designated as the Director of Emergency Management for items under our federal and state law for counties. I've asked Dr. David Lakey, who's our state's public health commissioner, to embed in our Emergency Operations Center. We've set up an incident command structure so that we can get the information quickly out to the public and quickly amongst ourselves. And I'm asking, and they have agreed to embed a CDC team here as well. Furthermore, I've got people from the city of Dallas, which is our largest city. It's about half of our population of the county. And the DISD, our largest school district, here at the embedded with us at the EOC as well. We're getting great support from our federal and state partners. They're the only politics of public safety and public health is that in times like this, there are no politics. We're all working together seamlessly. I appreciate the support we've been given from Dr. Frieden and his team, and from David and his team, and I'm happy to answer any questions about the situation on the ground.
Okay. Thank you. Kelly, I believe we're ready for questions. We likely have a lot of questions, so if we could be quick with our questions and answer, we'll get to as many as we can. Kelly? Kelly, are you there?
I'm sorry. Yes. If you do have a question at this time, to please press star followed by one on your touch tone phone. One moment for your first question, please.
And while we're waiting for the first question, I need to correct something I said a moment ago. And for those of you who are good at your Celsius and Fahrenheit, congratulations for picking this up. It was 36.3 Celsius, which is 97.3 Fahrenheit. I misstated that earlier. Basically, he didn't have a fever.
Thank you, sir. And our first question comes from Caleb Hellerman from CNN. Sir?
Thank you so much for taking the question. My question has to do with the four people who are being quarantined. You know, our understanding is, you know, there's about a dozen people more or less have been identified as, you know, close contact, as somewhat higher risk. Only these four are being quarantined. Can you explain that reasoning?
Dr. Frieden, I'll take this question. The decision to put a control order in place for these individuals was to ensure that we can monitor them as needed. I had concern yesterday in our ability to be confident that monitoring was going to take place, and that monitoring is extremely important. And so in order to ensure that monitoring took place, I signed that control order. Now, I want to be very clear. These individuals do not have any symptoms. They do not have fever at this time. They are healthy. There's no risk that they have spread disease to any other individual. But I need to make sure that we monitor those individuals. And so that is why I signed that control order. Now, I understand, and this is something that we are working very hard on today, that with that order and signing it comes the responsibility that those individuals are cared for compassionately and that they have the things that they need in order to obey that order, and so there's food being delivered to them right now. Groceries being delivered. We're arranging for that apartment to be cleaned. We had to identify an entity that would do that work. We've identified that and have signed the approval to get that in place. But in the information that I was given. I couldn't be confident that monitoring was going to take place the way that I needed it to take place, and that's why I signed the control order.
Very briefly, is this Dr. Lakey speaking or Judge Jenkins?
This is David Lakey, L-A-K-E-Y.
Thank you, Dr. Lakey. And could you very briefly describe the monitoring that you are concerned would not take place?
Our plan is for the individuals that have been identified as having exposure to have their temperatures monitored twice a day.
Next question, Kelly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Maggie Fox from NBC News. Your line is open.
Thanks very much. Dr. Lakey, are you concerned about this report that the hospital mistakenly sent the patient home? What have you found out about that? What is going to be your role in that investigation? And how important is it that this may have impacted public confidence in public health, given that everyone said, we know what we're doing here?
So thank you for the question. This is a very sophisticated hospital. They had done a lot of education related to preparedness for Ebola. When I was there yesterday, they discussed it with me. Unfortunately, connections weren't made related to travel history and symptoms, and the individuals caring for this individual did not think about, you know, the possibility of Ebola, and so he was sent home. I think the lesson for all of us, again, this is a very good hospital, and I think, you know, across the United States, people don't take the travel history as seriously as they need to, and make that connection on what's going on throughout the world right now. And so I think the lessons for hospitals across the United States and healthcare workers, and I'm reiterating this with hospitals across the state of Texas, is that they really have to take that travel history, ask individuals if they've been outside the United States, and if they've been outside the United States, if they've been in these areas of Africa that have been that have Ebola, and if so, they have to put Ebola on the differential diagnosis, use infection control, and contact public health. That is one of the main messages, I think, that needs to be spread out, as that in light of what's going on in this situation, that has to be part of the differential diagnosis, and hospitals have to work with public health.
Thanks. And this is Tom Frieden in Atlanta. I'll also comment that CDC has refreshed our information for hospitals with a checklist and poster. We recognize that it's a challenge for hospitals because the volume of patients seen in an emergency department may be high, and we're providing information that's clear and usable and encouraging good communication within the healthcare team so that information flows well. We'll also be hosting a Twitter chat today at 4 to answer questions about this and releasing a health alert notice for clinicians throughout the U.S. today. It's a teachable moment, as we say, and it's very important to emphasize travel histories. Just as an example of this, we have had at this point 15 patients of whom this was one tested for Ebola. Many of them have tested positive for malaria, which might not have been promptly treated if people hadn't taken the travel history. So just to emphasize the importance of that.
Next question, Kelly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jeff Brumfield from National Public Radio. Sir, your line is open.
I think, Dr. Frieden, there's been reports that the CDC was contacted directly by a relative after the patient was sent home. Can you say anything else about that contact and whether it was that sequence of events that actually got this guy the care he needed? And then I also had a question about the quarantine. Can you describe the circumstances? Is law enforcement there enforcing this thing? And, I mean, we've heard reports that there are towels and dirty laundry in the room. I mean, this doesn't inspire confidence, does it?
Well, I'll take the first question. Dr. Lakey from Texas will take the second. This is Tom Frieden. We're not aware of the family having contacted CDC, but we're looking into that. We've just heard that. I will say, just not about that particular issue, but we've seen a lot of misinformation. Not that any media would ever spread misinformation, but, you know, there was rumors of a second case that was not the case. There are, you know, other things that have been stated that in the media that may be confusing to people, and that's why we want to make sure that we're providing this information proactively, daily, with anything that we know when we know it. We've just heard of that statement. We're not familiar with that, but we'll review all of our call logs to see if that's there. In terms of quarantine, Dr. Lakey?
Absolutely. And so the apartment is monitored with there's a local law enforcement person there to in case individuals leave, then he can notify them about my order is written notification to them to stay. If they leave, then you have the possibility of a formal court order. But there is a law enforcement individual there. The house conditions need to be improved. We have been working to identify an entity that will go out there and do the cleaning. There's been a little bit of hesitancy for entities to want to do that, but we've identified an entity that will go out and do that cleaning, and that's taking place today.
Aren't you concerned, though, that putting these people in quarantine in these conditions is going to seriously hinder your contact tracing? People aren't going to want to come to you if they think a cop is going to show up outside their door and hold them inside for 21 days.
Well, we will not do this. The issue with in this situation is the need to have confident monitoring for individuals. Many other individuals that are having monitoring done, and we haven't had to do anything else in this situation in order for us to have confidence that monitoring was going to take place. Because of a variety of issues, we felt that this was needed. Judge Jenkins?
Yeah. This is Judge Jenkins. My medical director signed that as well. I concur in that decision. The information that we had about these four individuals indicated it was in the public's best interest to know that the public didn't have people leaving the premises on a regular basis against a recommendation. And it is a delicate balance, and we recognize that it's a delicate balance. We're concerned about people feeling that it's an overreaction and not coming forward with their contacts, but we're also concerned with the public losing trust in the response if they're repeatedly seeing people that the media has now made them aware are in this family who are leaving this house. So it's a fluid situation. People may disagree with our decisions, but we're united in them, and that's a decision that we made.
This is Dr. Frieden at CDC Atlanta, and we'll take the next question. I will just comment that the critical point is to make sure that every contact can be monitored for their temperature. So as I understand it, and as Dr. Lakey has elaborated, this is to ensure that temperatures can be monitored. Let's go to the next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Arthur Allen from Politico. Your line is open, sir.
Yeah, hi. I had a question about the interaction that took place in the hospital during the first visit. We heard yesterday, I believe, that, in fact, a nurse had confirmed that he came from Liberia and that this was worth investigating, that this wasn't communicated with the doctor, and the doctor who ended up caring for the individual the first time. And I was wondering, do we know any more details of how this communication fell through the cracks? Did it have anything to do with the systems they were using in the emergency room to record information from patients as they came in?
Tom, I'll take this question. We're working with the hospital right now to make sure we fully understand what happened that night. They've been in communication with their administration. They are looking at the records so they can identify what information each individual knew and how that happened. But I don't have that final analysis right now, but we've been in communication with the hospital to make sure we have a clear understanding of what happened that evening. Thank you.
That was Dr. Lakey. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Carolyn Chen from Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was wondering whether or not the patient has been able to receive any visitors, or whether the patient is able to talk on the phone with his relatives. Second question is whether or not the patient is receiving any of the experimental drugs and whether that's being considered.
Dr. Frieden, this is David Lakey. I'll take the first question. The hospital is being very careful with what related to visitors. When I went to see the individual, I had to sign in. There's a guard there. They are not having visitors come and see this individual as per protocol for treating for an individual like this. He does have a phone with him, and he's been able to call individuals and talk to individuals, and that's how he's communicating with his family and other individuals. But they're not allowing visitors to the ward at this time.
Thank you.
And this is Tom Frieden, CDC. In terms of experimental treatment, this is something that is being discussed with the hospital and the patient and family, and would be made available if that were the choice.
And who gets who will be the deciding person in this case?
The treating physician and the patient and family.
Great.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Eben Brown from Fox News Radio. Line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I don't know if there's much you can say on this to anyone. Probably it would be for you, Dr. Frieden, basically just because of the course of your investigation. But the Associated Press earlier reported really within, I guess, the past hour that Liberia is planning to prosecute this patient due to lying on a health form. I'm assuming it means this patient. And is this something that you uncovered during your investigation back into his travel history?
Well, as I mentioned, the individual did not have a fever when he left. The status of his possible exposures prior to departure is something that's being investigated further now. The exit form that we have created along with the Liberian authorities and which is being used in all three of the heavily affected countries does ask about exposures to patients who may have had Ebola either in their caregiving or in their funeral process. So those questions are on that form. I would emphasize that the reality is that it's the case that individuals often don't know what their exposures may have been, and not all individuals fully disclose what those exposures have been. I think this gets to a broader issue, which is the issue of can we make the risk zero? And I think that's really ultimately what everyone is asking. And the bottom line here is the plain truth, we can't make the risk zero until the outbreak is controlled in West Africa. What we can do is minimize that risk, as is being done now in Dallas, by working to ensure that there are no more individuals exposed than have already been exposed. We can also work to continue to ensure as complete exit screening as possible. And we have already pulled many people off planes or off the line to enter planes. In September alone, more than a dozen individuals who had fever. Now, the vast majority of those did not have Ebola. They may have had malaria or a cold or other things, but we're going to err on the side of safety. But until the outbreak is controlled in West Africa, we won't be able to get to that zero risk.
I have another question, if you don't mind. It's a very simple question. Ebola being bloodborne, is it transferable by mosquito? I've gotten a lot of questions about that, and I think the answer is no, but I'd like your opinion, or your expertise, rather.
No. The answer is no.
Next question, please, Kelly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Denise Grady from the New York Times. Your line is open.
Thank you. Given that this patient was out and about for a few days, apparently while he had symptoms, people are concerned about this, and we are getting questions about the idea that, in theory, this could happen again, and people are worried about the safety of public transportation and places where you may be exposed to crowds of people at close quarters. Can someone comment on that, please? And then I would like to add one more question, and that is, has the family in quarantine, if they have not had their apartment cleaned by an outside source yet, have they at least been given instructions or bleach or anything to clean the apartment on their own?
Okay, I'll take the first set of questions and then ask the folks in Texas to handle the second. It is not impossible that we will have other individuals come into the country and be diagnosed with Ebola. That's why we have 12 laboratories throughout the country that are ready to test. We've already, as I mentioned, tested 14 other individuals who have been negative so far. In terms of things like public transportation, that's actually one of our examples of how people are not in contact. If you sit next to someone on the bus, you're not exposed. I'm not saying this individual took a bus. I'm just saying that this is not like flu. It's not like measles. It's not like the common cold. It's not as spreadable. It's not as infectious as those conditions. What's scary about it is that it's so serious, so severe, if you do become infected with it. In terms of cleaning in the household, David?
No, I can jump in, and then I think Judge Jenkins also wants to jump in. But starting at the very beginning of this, the local health department had somebody in that house evaluating the individual. Bedding and other materials were bagged, and education was related to how you decontaminate. The issue was making sure that we could have an entity that felt comfortable with the decontamination of the apartment.
And our understanding is there is a garbage bag of the man's clothes and belongings. They have some household trash they've got a bag of household trash, and they have mattresses pushed against the wall. I believe the household trash would consist of the sheets that he slept on. So those are bagged and they're not coming into contact with those. But this is an ongoing response. Dr. Lakey and I are not satisfied with that. We want to ensure that they are getting regular food, that house is cleaned, that they are in an appropriate living environment. We are taking action to make sure that occurs. There is no perfect response. There's just responses that people do their very best. I think people are doing their best here, and we are going to, as quickly as possible, improve on the hygiene there.
Next question, Kelly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Sandra Torrey from the USA Today. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for doing this call. Despite everything that's been said about how this is transmitted only by bodily fluids, at least to me there's still some confusion, and I'll try to explain. If you sneeze, it would seem that mucus is a bodily fluid. If you're sweating and touch an airline tray, that's bodily fluid. I don't understand. Would that be, if you were symptomatic at that time, transferable to somebody else who touched that tray later? Would they have to have a cut for it to be transferable? It's unclear to me what you mean by only bodily fluids and only, quote-unquote, close contact. Could you try to explain better?
So I think, I think the bottom line is that all of our experience with Ebola in Africa over the last four decades indicates that direct contact is how it spreads, and only direct contact with someone who's ill with Ebola. So there are certainly theoretical situations where someone sneezes, and if you then were sneezed on and then touched your eye or mouth or nose with the part of your body that was sneezed on, it would not be impossible that you could get spread in that way. And that's why, if you look at our guidelines, with a prolonged exposure within 1 meter or 3 feet is considered contact, to be on the safer side of defining who a contact is. So I think realistically, you can say, what may be theoretically possible, as opposed to what actually happens in the real world, and focusing our attention on those who may be at risk because they did have contact with body fluids or with the patient directly when he was sick.
Next question, Kelly.
Thank you very much. Our next question comes from Alahi Azadi from from Washington Post.
Yes, thanks for taking the call. I just wanted some more clarity about these four individuals who are under quarantine. Are they all adults? And can you explain a little further about the situation that led to the lack of confidence that they could be monitored? Was it a matter of them trying to leave for good, or was it more of a coming and going situation?
I don't think I can get into the details of all the particulars that we looked at. It was just in the midst of the information that we were receiving about different situations, we didn't have the confidence that we would be able to monitor them the way that we needed to. I'll just leave it at that.
Next question, Kelly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Isolda Piguero from Telemundo Network.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my question. I would like to ask Dr. Friedman, we have heard before that there's about only 13 states in the United States which hospitals are prepared to handle Ebola patients. So we would like to know, how are the hospitals in the United States preparing in case that they get a patient that is been infected with the virus as Bellevue Hospital is doing in New York City.
Thank you for the question. Just to reiterate, essentially any hospital in the country can safely take care of Ebola. You don't need a special hospital room to do it. You do need a private room with a private bathroom. And most importantly, you need rigorous, meticulous training and materials to make sure that that care is done safely so that the caregivers aren't at risk. I think this incident has certainly reminded healthcare facilities throughout the country the importance of taking a careful travel history, of having an index of suspicion that says if there's any possibility of Ebola, immediately isolate, assess, and if appropriate, test. It's also highlighted some of the more challenging issues, and we've talked about one of them on the call, and there has been some media coverage of this as well. It's the issue of medical waste. The medical waste that leaves the hospital is an area of concern because we want to make sure that it's handled carefully if it is contaminated. Some of that medical waste may be too large to fit into the autoclaves that hospitals have. So we've been working intensively with the Department of Transportation, which has the regulatory authority here, and with the major companies that do the removal of medical waste to resolve this issue, and I anticipate it getting resolved today. But there are complex issues that hospitals need to be able to assess in order to make sure that they care for patients appropriately. As of today, we have gotten 100 inquiries from around the country, from 34 different states, of hospitals or health departments that are concerned that they may have had a patient with Ebola. We've assessed each and every one of those inquiries. We've identified 15 in which testing was indicated, and this one patient is the only patient positive at this point. Next question.
Now, if I have a follow-up question quickly.
I'm sorry. Next question comes from Robert Ray from Al Jazeera America. Your line is open.
Thank you for taking the question. Dr. Frieden, what can you say about the possibility of desperate people in West Africa who know that they've been exposed to the Ebola infection and will then try to get on an airplane before a fever begins? And also, secondly, a follow-up on that, if indeed we see more people come up with the Ebola infection in the United States, I know you're doing contact tracing right now, but what is the next level after that? What is the worst-case scenario for you guys? What will you do?
Well, I think really the scenario that has us most concerned is what's happening in West Africa today. And the problem there was that there were too many patients for the isolation beds available. And when that happened, then patients didn't come in for care, and there was widespread transmission in the community. That's why we really emphasize supportive, effective care for individuals, highlighting that with supportive care, we can greatly improve the chances that an individual will survive and minimize the chance that any caregiver will become infected. The only way to get to zero risk is to stop the outbreak in West Africa. But there are multiple lines of defense to protect this country. The first is stopping it at the source. The next is making sure that people with fever are not boarding airplanes. The next is making sure that our primary care providers and emergency departments are thinking of the possibility of Ebola and rapidly isolating individuals if they may have Ebola and testing them. And the next is what's happening in Texas today, is taking that meticulous, rigorous effort to limit the likelihood or eliminate the possibility that more people would be exposed.
But do you think that there should be something put in place for international travelers, specifically people coming in from West Africa, when they land here in the U.S., that perhaps their fever or their temperature should be taken right away? Because what if, like I said, some desperate person over there knows that they've been exposed and they can afford a plane ticket, and they know that if they land here in the U.S., they can get that proper care, no matter what?
One of the things that we do at CDC is have quarantine stations and international airports throughout the U.S., and anytime there's an ill traveler, we would rapidly intervene to isolate that individual and ensure that they're appropriately tested. I think that the question more broadly gets into the issue of should we be isolating these countries in some way, and Honestly, I think this is a tough question, and it's one that is coming up and will come up increasingly. I will give you our perspective of it. It's very much like the situation with regard to individuals. If we take actions that seem like they may work, they may be the kind of solution to a complex problem that's quick, simple, and wrong. Because the approach of isolating a country is going to make it harder to get help into that country. It's going to make it harder to get people to respond because they're not going to want to come out. They're not going to be able to come out if they go in. And because of that, it will enable the disease to spread more widely there and ultimately potentially spread more to other countries in Africa and become more of a risk to us here. So the best way to protect ourselves is not to try to seal off these countries, but to provide the kind of services that are needed so that the disease is contained there and to identify anyone who may come out. Again, the only way to get to zero risk is going to be to stop it there.
Next question, Kelly.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Alice Park of Time. Your line is open.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask about more details concerning the contact tracing. Can you give us a sense for, other than the dozen or so direct contacts, how widely is a contact or is a monitoring occurring? Are we talking people who may have been on a bus, people who are at a workplace setting, at a school? Could you give us some sense of how far those rings extend?
Dr. Frieden, do you want me to answer?
Well, I think the bottom line is, I'll begin and Dr. Leahy can continue, is we start with people who had direct contact, so obviously family members. We'll assess also the healthcare provision environment, both in transport and in the hospitals, with detailed interviews of exactly what happened, exactly what the contacts were. And so we're identifying anyone who might have had that kind of direct contact that could have exposed them to body fluids of the individual. Dr. Leahy?
No, I would agree with you. We're doing it in an organized fashion. You have individuals that were in the house. You look at who the individual had contact in the community. You may have come in and out of the house. And in the work that CDC is doing right now in the hospital, doing the hard work to identify who could have had contact with the individual, but you do it in a logical fashion to make sure that we identify the folks that are most at risk as quick as we can.
But can you give me some sense of whether are there workplace setting other than the hospital, just some schools, how the monitoring for the 80 or so individuals now, where are they?
We're still assessing, but at this point there is no workplace or community location where we believe there were any exposures.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Robert Lowe from Medscape Medical News. Your line is open.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have two questions. Can you just, and this is, I guess, directed toward Dr. Leahy, how many individuals are being visited by a healthcare worker and being evaluated twice a day in terms of the monitoring?
Leahy.
Yes, so the actual number is, changes. We have as Dr. Frieden noted earlier, there are 100 individuals that are being assessed for possible risk. We have a handful of individuals that have the potential of exposure, and we're monitoring those individuals with that twice daily monitoring, the individuals in the house, but then there's other individuals in the community. And that's changing, and it will change kind of throughout the day as more information is identified. But every individual that we're identifying that has that risk will get that twice-day monitoring.
Well, as of this morning or this afternoon, how many are on the list? I understand it can change, but right now, what is it?
You know, we will update on that tomorrow in our daily call. But at this point, we'll just say that we're assessing it at the middle of the first full day of the investigation, and we will be providing that information going forward. We'll take two more questions.
All right, thank you. Our next question comes from John Frank from Modern Healthcare Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi, this is for Dr. Frieden, and you may have referred to this before, but there were reports this morning that a patient was being tested in Hawaii for possibly having Ebola. Can you comment on that, and has CDC gotten involved if that is the case?
We have gotten involved, and we have determined that neither the symptoms nor the travel history are suggestive of Ebola, and therefore no further follow-up is needed in that situation. Last question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Anna Kampoy from Wall Street Journal.
Hi. Are you planning to quarantine more individuals that were in close contact with the patient? And if so, what are the criteria to determine whether someone should be ordered to stay home, like the family members?
We have no intention to put other individuals under a control order. We are working with individuals, making sure that they're educated related to risk, the monitoring, that the public health messages that have to take place. And so I have no intention to do this for other individuals. And having said that, if that working with individuals does not take place and there's somebody that we believe is at a significant risk that we have to monitor them, then this is something that we'll talk about with them. But I have no intentions right now to put in another control order.
And I agree with that. We're going to do what's necessary to keep the public safe and to keep their confidence that this is being contained and to make sure that people who need to be monitored are available to be monitored by the monitors. But there should be no need for further orders.
This is Dr. Frieden. Just to thank you all for your participation and repeat the bottom line here. We are undertaking, in conjunction with the state and local authorities, the meticulous and rigorous efforts that are needed to identify anyone who may have been exposed and then monitor them closely so that if they were to develop symptoms, they would be rapidly isolated and tested. We anticipate doing daily conference calls to update with any information that's available. We know that we all wish there were more information available, but we will give you all of the valid information we have as soon as we have it. We will welcome your questions. We will update on our website as well. And I'll just turn it over to Tom Skinner to close the call.
Thank you all for joining us today. This concludes our call. If you have additional follow-up questions or need additional information, you may call the CDC press office at 404-639-3286. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you. That does conclude today's conference call. You may all disconnect at this time.